Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. 3 months ago, a series of random, violent stabbings paralyzed the city of Davis. Over the span of several days, two people were killed and one critically injured in the college town. In the months since, a former UC Davis student has been charged with murder and attempted murder, and currently a jury is deciding if 21-year-old Carlos Rielis Dominguez is mentally fit to stand trial. The competency hearing at Yolo County Superior Court is ongoing and is currently on break this week. CAP Radio's Kate Wolf has been following the case closely and joins us with an update on where things stand, as well as the legal maneuvering on both sides. Good morning, Kate.
Good morning, Vicky.
So take us back to the end of April, beginning of May, and remind us what actually happened over the course of those several days.
This was a really intense time for people who lived in Davis and had loved ones in Davis. The whole thing started on April 27th when David Bro, also known as Compassion Guy around town, was found with multiple stab wounds in Central Park. He was known to be around Central Park, often telling and talking to people about compassion. And it was extremely rare for small town Davis. So police presence in the town was bolstered. People were advised to report anything suspicious. And 2 days later, residents living near Sycamore Park heard a commotion outside and found a 20-year-old UC Davis student named Kareem Abu Najim stabbed to death. He'd been biking home, and the suspect actually fled on his bike. So Davis was more on edge, right? The school was making classes remote, imposing a curfew. 2 days later, a 64-year-old woman named Kimberly Guillory was sleeping in a tent in a homeless encampment when she was stabbed twice through the wall of her tent, and her assailant was stopped when some witnesses nearby intervened. So she was critically injured but survived and was able to provide a description to police. And the Davis police called in dozens of law enforcement from other agencies to help in the search.
Yeah, there was just so much going on over the span of a very short time. It was obviously scary and chaotic as well. What led to Carlos Rielis Dominguez's arrest?
A week after that first stabbing, Dominguez was arrested. So there were hundreds of tips that came from the community. And on May 4th, Davis police received a number of tips from people that saw someone matching witness descriptions walking aimlessly in and near Sycamore Park, where Najim was killed. And they found lots of evidence that Dominguez was connected, including marks on his hands and wrists showing that he could have been in struggle and a knife in his bag.
And the 21-year-old was a student at UC Davis as early as the beginning of this year, correct?
Yes, he was. And very shortly before the stabbing started, he was, quote, separated from the university for academic reasons. He was expelled for academic reasons.
So he has been in court multiple times since his arrest, and you've been following this trial and these proceedings. What is his demeanor like? Does he ever address the judge or even the courtroom?
He has been in court multiple times, always wearing a green suicide smock with his dark wavy hair in front of his face, and he just doesn't seem engaged with the proceedings at all. He sits completely silently and completely still. A few times he has spoken out, and I'll just say exactly what he said during these two times. The first time during a pretrial conference, he said, "Can I say something? I don't want an attorney. I would like to take it by myself if possible." And the second time, after a court-appointed doctor found him incompetent to stand trial, he said, "I want to apologize, and I want to say I'm guilty and forgive me." And, you know, he wasn't screaming these things. He was loudly saying them to the judge. And one thing I'll note about his appearance throughout time is that he has lost a significant amount of weight to my eye and has become more and more pale and unkempt.
In that last quote that you shared, when he said that he's guilty, does that count as a plea?
No, because when his competency was questioned, the criminal trial was suspended. And so then it just, that can't be held against him.
Right. So that brings us to the competency trial, which is currently underway. And that is essentially to determine if Carlos Rielis Dominguez essentially knows and can understand that he's being tried for two murders and one attempted murder. So what goes into this?
So it's that he can understand it and also that he can assist in his defense. And I think think that's important because competency, I think of it as that there's no difference between how you would defend yourself if you were in your right mind and how you would defend yourself now, right? That's kind of how competency plays in. And so, yeah, so Dominguez's public defender, Daniel Hutchinson, asked for a psychiatric assessment. He said it was his firm belief that Dominguez was not competent. And we got that competency ruling from a court ordered doctor, and the prosecution challenged that finding, and so it became a trial.
I see. And then it is within the defense's right to question the competency or to say that, you know, their defendant, their client is not competent to stand trial. Got it. So the defense goes first. And so you actually got to take in the defense's presentation. Who did they call on to shed light on Dominguez's state of mind?
The defense brought forward former friends and roommates of Dominguez, and then social workers who had been witnessing Dominguez during his time in trial, and then two psychologists who'd assessed Dominguez. So kind of three different kind of groups of people. The former roommates and Dominguez's ex-girlfriend, they really painted a picture of who he was over his time in UC Davis up until he was arrested for these crimes. They said he was a reserved person to begin with, but he was ambitious, family-oriented. But over the course of his sophomore and junior years, he began isolating himself more and more, stopped taking care of himself, stopped taking care of his cat. And he shared with them some hallucinations he was having, and that he was hearing things, including the devil talking to him in his sleep.
Well, then that brings me to the mental health professionals that were part of this competency trial. What did they say about him?
So, yeah, we heard from those other two groups, right? Mental health professionals in the jail and then people who independently assessed him. And there's a lot of overlap in what they're all saying, right? That he has many physical symptoms of a mental illness. The consensus seems to be schizophrenia, including that he is, you know, sitting and standing in rigid postures for a long time. He doesn't seem to be able to do daily functions of daily living, including showering, eating regularly. He believes that he is still enrolled at UC Davis, and he denies having any mental health symptoms. So he has also been sent to the hospital a number of times from jail because of effectively self-neglect. They can't force him to eat and hydrate, but the hospital can. Ultimately, the court-ordered psychologist, Dr. Juliana Rohr, wrote in her competency report that he was not competent and should not stand trial. She said, quote, although Mr. Dominguez is cooperative, his difficulties with poverty of speech, poverty of thought, concrete thinking, lack of motivation, and distrust of people render him unable to assist counsel in presenting defense at this point.
Was there any testimony relating to the belief potentially that he may be embellishing or even faking a mental illness?
That psychologist I mentioned, Dr. Juliana Rohr, she works with the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and she said she's assessed many people for faking it, which is otherwise known as malingering. So she said she knows signs, and often people fake delusions or hallucinations, but they don't do something that would make them uncomfortable. And she said Dominguez is able to sit completely still for 7 to 8 hours. And that was a huge sign to her that he is not faking it. He sits in incredibly uncomfortable positions. And she also added that he denies having any mental health issues. He's denied it to multiple doctors. And that is not consistent with someone who is faking a mental illness.
You know, how did that assessment of Dominguez when he's in custody, how did that relate to his demeanor in court? Because you were actually able to observe him as well.
While Rohr was talking, she repeatedly, you know, gestured to Dominguez and mentioned how utterly still he was. And that's something I saw, noticed throughout the week of the trial. He sat completely still and did not react to anything or say a word that I saw.
So another question is, why is this a jury trial? Don't judges usually determine competency?
So after that competency report came in, the prosecution challenged it. And And they, it's within their right to challenge that and to ask for a trial. So when that, and they asked not for a judge trial, but for a jury trial, right? And when that was suggested, the defense was against it. They were saying, this is rare. You know, we haven't really done this too much before. But it does happen. I asked around and found it does happen. And it's within the right of either party to ask for a jury trial. If both parties had waived the right to jury, it would have gone to the judge.
Is there an advantage from for one side or the other if it goes to a jury instead of a judge?
So it favors the prosecution. It favors the DA's office. So now the defense has to bear the burden of proving that Dominguez is incompetent, right? That he is not competent to stand trial. So they need to prove to the jury that he has schizophrenia and his current circumstances make him unable to stand trial. I asked Mark Reichel about this. He's a longtime criminal defense attorney here in Sacramento with experience as a federal public defender. Here's how he described the prosecution's tactic.
Their argument is the defense, okay, this individual and his legal team, they have to prove to you, okay, they have to make you convinced by a preponderance of the evidence that he's not competent to understand what's going on and to help his defense. And so, you know, they're going to say that's all we're here for. And they're going to basically say, and the bottom line is, come on, you know he's competent.
So the prosecution is sowing that doubt, hoping the jury will side with them. And the prosecution's line of questioning seems to be suggesting that even if Dominguez does have schizophrenia, people with schizophrenia can still understand and assist in their defense.
At the end of the day, you know, it's really difficult to expect jurors to literally have a one-week crash course, okay, in neuroscience, in psychiatry, and to understand complex things, you know, like schizophrenia. And especially if the DA's office can prove, look, there's disagreement in the medical community about some of this stuff. So if, you know, PhDs from Harvard don't agree on something, how can the 12 of you, you know, agree with what the defense has to say?
Another thing Reichel said that I thought was important is that the judge, if it had gone to a judge to determine that, he is more likely to rule that Dominguez is incompetent, not only because he's seen more of this stuff, but also because it's a capital case, right? Dominguez's life is on the line. So if Dominguez gets the death penalty, everything is going to be appealed. So the judge wants to defer to the defendant's right, wants to defer to Dominguez's right and make sure his record is clean.
I see. So basically, as it stands now, the future of whether this trial moves forward is kind of, there's a fork in the road. So what happens if he is found incompetent, and what happens if he's found to be competent?
I think either way, a trial for Dominguez's crimes will happen. If he's incompetent, he'll be sent to a state mental hospital to be rehabilitated back to being mentally fit, right? Given psychotropic medicine, monitored. When, and I guess if he's back to competency, he'll be tried for the crimes he's charged for. If he is found competent, two murder charges and attempted murder charge, that trial will be scheduled.
And as I mentioned, you know, this is currently on a 1 week break. And so you heard from the defense, but let's dive into the prosecution because you're going to get more details and more information from this side as well. When do they start? And also, why is there a break in the trial? Why isn't this just going seamlessly?
The defense hasn't finished calling witnesses, so it's unclear when the prosecution will start, but likely Monday or Tuesday of next week. Judge Samuel T. McAdams said he wanted to give the jury deliberations on Wednesday or after Wednesday. So this week, it's actually just a pre-scheduled non-trial week for the judge, so that's why it's on break.
What is the prosecution going to present?
During their opening statements, the prosecution told jurors that Dominguez is toying with the system and he's capable of making decisions based on what's going on around him. They argued that someone could have schizophrenia and still be competent to stand trial. Something we will be looking out for is I've heard mention of a video of an investigator going undercover as an inmate to speak with Dominguez, but haven't heard any more details. So we'll see about that.
If the prosecution is successful, what happens next? When would jury selection start for murder and attempted murder trial?
So, yeah, if they're successful at convincing the jury Dominguez is competent, his criminal trial will be scheduled. There are a lot of steps before then, so it's not clear to me when jury selection would start. But Dominguez does have the right to a speedy trial, so likely relatively soon.
You touched upon Carlos Reales Dominguez's demeanor and, you know, physically how he has changed in the last 3 months. Did you learn anything more about, you know, life or his situation behind bars?
Every time Dominguez comes to court, he's wearing that suicide smock, that green kind of army looking suicide smock. And that's because he's been held on suicide watch. It's extremely solitary. Nothing can be in your cell, including papers. You know, they have to tape papers to the outside of your cell for you to see and read. And you can't even have utensils, right? So you have to eat off a styrofoam tray with no utensils. And he's been on suicide watch for so long, not because he's said that he wants to hurt himself or anything like that. It's because he seems unable to care for himself. And those mental health professionals that I talked about earlier, they say he, quote, hasn't identified a safety plan for himself or a reason for living. So that's why he's been on suicide watch. And another thing the defense is highlighting about Dominguez's time behind bars is that a psychiatrist requested that he get emergency psychotropic medicine after seeing him. So stuff to help manage what she believed was schizophrenia. And she felt that his mental illness was causing a life-threatening situation for him, that he, you know, wasn't eating, wasn't drinking. And so she ordered this psychotropic medicine, but it took over three weeks to actually get that to him, even though it was pegged as a life-threatening situation.
Hmm. Any idea about how this is continuing to impact the Davis and UC Davis community?
School is out right now, so I imagine students are following this from afar, if they are following it. Things are up in the air, so it's not clear how the jury will rule. Of course, I think closing statements and how the jury rules will bring forward a reaction in Davis, and I'll definitely be watching out for that.
Finally, Kate, you're a healthcare reporter. What stands out to you in taking this all in?
There's a lot that I've learned through this, especially about how, you know, people with mental illness are treated in court situations or in criminal justice situations. As a health reporter, you know, it was really illuminating to see how we treat people who have mental illness in jails and how ill-prepared county jails are to help people with mental health issues if they are identified as having mental health issues. Mm. So, yeah.
Kate, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you, Vicky.
Kate Wolf is a reporter for Cap Radio and has been following this trial. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.